and Kevin. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors on 104.5 The Zone.
Happy Wednesday on the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, 601. And by the way, when trust matters, you can count on All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. Professional garage door installation and repair from a family-owned and operated business. Visit FourSeasonsGarages.com to learn more. Mark Howard, along with Blaine Bishop, our producer Jonathan Schaefer, Kevin Ingram off this week. Great guest list. Terrific guest list. A little bit later this hour, we're going to re-air the interview with Mike Giannitti from Spot Track, talking about the contract, of course, of Patrick Mahomes, of the Chiefs, and other subjects. 7 o'clock hour, 7:15. I want an apology. A little bit later in that hour, Chris Lee from VandySports.com. A lot going on there. 8:15, of course, Brent Hubbs from BallQuest.com, talking all things University of Tennessee sports. 9 o'clock, 9:15, our buddy Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, talking college football and what's going on, you know, with that and the COVID testing. And later in that hour, Pete Sweeney, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs, writes for SB Nation. He had a really interesting column on the Mahomes negotiation and the whole thought behind that contract. Guys, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday, I guess. I guess for some, no, not happy Wednesday. If you were Deshaun Jackson and crew.
Well, Deshaun Jackson kind of gets what he deserves. First of all, when you mention Hitler in any kind of social media forum, it's just not going to go right for you. I don't know what he was trying to say, but he alienated a lot of people, not only in the Eagles organization, your general manager and your owner are both Jewish, and they were highly offended. So Deshaun Jackson did a lot of backtracking or backpedaling yesterday, and we'll see if he can make it right. But I don't know what he was thinking about in his Instagram post. It offended me, but you know what can I say? But that was not very well thought out. But yesterday, the pandemic, once again impeded on the sports world. If you were a Nashville, SC fan, you were hoping to see a game tonight in Orlando, and suddenly, Schaefer, with all those positive tests, you foreshadowed that the last couple of days, and now no soccer tonight. And you wonder, what's going to happen for Nashville SC, not only in this tournament, but for the rest of the season.
Well, what's really a shame about it, beyond those that are affected by the coronavirus, which, of course, we wish all of them well. We've been told that they're asymptomatic, and we know there's a few other tests that they're still waiting results on, is how brightly this season started over at Nissan Stadium, and having a near full stadium and just tens of thousands of people there, and really all the energy and all the excitement that had gone into it. And now you have a situation where you can't even play your first game back because of the pandemic. So they're still a part of the tournament. They're still in it as of right now, unlike FC Dallas that was forced to withdraw by the league. But we will see what will happen going forward. But obviously disappointing for fans and just Nashville sports fans in general, looking forward to watching that tonight and getting some kind of normalcy back into their lives. But unfortunately, Nashville will not be playing tonight against Chicago Fire.
Yeah, exactly. Their game postponed. And a couple of other things. The Ryder Cup, one of my favorite events every 2 years, has been postponed to 2021. It was supposed to be played at Whistling Straits. That, to me, outside of the majors, is the best golf event of the year. No question about that. And closer to home, again, the big news yesterday is that Vanderbilt is folding up its athletic communications department. Our buddy Larry Leathers, who was the SID for the Commodores football team, retired or accepted a retirement package, and now we understand what's going on here. Andy Boggs, who oversees football and golf, was forced out, and that they're going to just fold it into the university, communications department. But guys, we hate to see people lose their jobs.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, with anything. So that's it's kind of weird. I guess we want to hear the cause and effect, Mark. I mean, you just talked about why this happened and how this is going to affect not only people not with jobs, and how does this affect the athletic department? And then how do they move forward with the university actually somewhat running the – in communications anyway, running the athletic department?
Yeah, in college sports, usually, we've seen – sports information departments grow and not contract, but that's what you have at Vanderbilt, where they do things differently. There's no doubt about it. They're the only private university in the SEC, and they march to the beat of a different drummer. And we know that when they eliminated their athletic department, quote unquote, 10 or 15 years ago, everybody, forecast doom for their football, basketball, and other sports in the athletic area of the university. But they really did fine when it was all said and done. They had the James Franklin era. They had early success under Derek Mason. In basketball, they went to the NCAA tournament under Kevin Stallings. And Bryce Drew that first year. They've had phenomenal success under Tim Corbin, won two national championships. So, you can do it another way. But again, when we're seeing people, forced out of their jobs, Larry at first made it sound like a choice. And essentially what these employees who have been laid off can do, they can reapply in September for a job in the University of Communications department, and maybe they get their jobs back, but maybe they don't. But this is something you don't see at most universities. So Blaine, you're right. We're gonna have to wait and see.
Yeah, when I hear all that, you talked about the coaches. The coaches are successful in their teams because they are the coaches. That's not a reflection of how you run your athletic department. If he demands out of his players and he's a really good coach, they're going to get results. So behind the scenes and communications and everything else, I don't think really affects mentally and going into the season. If you have great coaches, you will have success. See, so people will try to measure success by just the coach's success. Well, that obviously wasn't what was going on there. If the university didn't think that the communication department was doing their job, or they let some cracks go through the, get through the cracks, I guess. Some things get through the cracks. So those are two different things to me that you were talking about. And a coach's success doesn't breed to say that the people behind the scenes are always doing what the university wants them to do. And that's not supposed to happen. So obviously you could have success and still be, not where you want to be in other departments in the athletic realm.
It's kind of interesting. We had just talked about the soccer story. And I got two texts from friends of mine in the business, and they both asked the question, is this a prelude of things to come? We've got the NBA, we've got the NHL, we've got Major League Baseball in 2 weeks trying to start its season. Is this a prelude of things to come? Are we going to see a lot of positive tests here across the board, which will obviously wreak havoc? Forget fans in the stands. Forget any of that stuff. Can the players get back on the field?
Well, I mean, if you don't think that there's going to be a lot of positive tests, I think you're blind. I don't understand why people don't think there will be positive tests, because these guys are getting tested. That's why we're seeing. So it's a microcosm of society. Now more and more people are getting tested. You see more and more people with positive tests. Well, the athletes are no different. We're going to see more positive tests. Is how you mandate and how you have everything flowing through, and what are your policies and procedures to guard against it, and hopefully that it's not enough players where you have to shut that team down, let alone maybe the sport down. So, I mean, if people think that guys aren't going to test positive, I mean, I think that's really being naive. I think there are going to be – it's the point of how many I think it's really going to be the question. And how do you then, with all the things you have mandated within your sport, how do you handle it? And then as it evolves and changes throughout the time with guys testing positive, guys coming back, what are the policy procedures for the individual teams to then move forward? I mean, that's it's really funny with people. Oh, man, it's, yeah, did you not expect people to test positive? Really? I mean, I would think that it's going to be a lot of guys test positive. And then what happens? I mean, just imagine it. Imagine if Trout, like if, say, baseball, tests positive. He was already questionable in his mind that I'm not sure if I should. I'm not comfortable yet. Well, then will they shut him down, or will then a couple other guys that's on the team test positive, and then are they going to just shut those guys down? And then all of a sudden, then it becomes, oh, the other team had 8 guys, the next team had 15 guys. And then it kind of builds. So what happens then? Those are the questions. I think guys testing positive is something that you have to expect and you try to prepare for.
You're right. This story rattled Jonathan Schaefer so much, he applied hand sanitizer, while we were talking about it. So that's how close this thing is to home.
That's because I blew my nose and I used hand sanitizer because I love all the people around me, Mark.
Thank you.
Well, you know what's so bad? It was so funny, man. I used hand sanitizer. I had to stop using it as much. My hands were getting dried out. I was so paranoid and trained. Let me put on some hand sanitizer. I mean, I probably was doing it too much and washing my hands almost, you know, every time I did something. So that shows you the paranoia that happens. And I don't even realize that I'm doing it. It's just that I'm doing it more. We're just trying to protect, you know, myself and my family and anybody I'm around. Yeah, no doubt.
All right. Straight ahead. We'll wash our hands. And then on the other side, we'll replay our interview with Mike Jannetty of SpotTrac, but also talk about the stunning revelations coming from the head of the NFL Players Association about the negotiations to go to training camp. Some interesting nuggets involved there. 6:13 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Six:20 on the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, our producer Jonathan Schaefer, Kevin off this week. Now, yesterday, in reaction to the new contract that Patrick Mahomes signed, we brought in Mike Jannetty from SpotTrac, and he had this to say about the Mahomes deal and some other pressing issues. Patrick Mahomes, of course, the big story, 10 years, $450 million, maybe as much as $503 million. With this extension, give us some of the highlights of his new deal.
Right, so it's 12 years, $477 million in terms of base. And really, sort of unprecedentedly, he can have it all if he wants it. There's really not an out for Kansas City at any point in time here. There's a full no-trade clause. All of these bonuses and salaries vest a couple of years early, so if he wants to play this thing out the whole way through, he can, and there's really not too much Kansas City can do about it. So it's a very player-empowered contract, which is very unlikely for the NFL. This is new. So when we're talking about market reset and kind of things that are unprecedented with this contract, that's where I'm talking about it. You know, the 12 years may come to bite him, of course, because anytime you sign a long-term contract in a league that increases revenue so rapidly, it's going to get priced out. But it's team-friendly for 3 years, so this good Chiefs team right now can sort of stay intact and try to contend over the next couple of seasons. And then it really explodes up into the $45 and $50 million per year mark. So I like it, how it's structured. I like how much control Patrick Mahomes got out of this contract, and I really think that's going to be something that we see going forward with the elite players.
How does this compare with the deal signed by Carson Wentz or Jared Goff?
That one was so incentive-laden, right? Those two guys basically have to perform at a very high level to continue to get paid. That's not the case with Patrick Mahomes. They have basically said, we know who you are. We know who you're going to be. We're going to pay you to be the leader of this team for 10 to 12 years. And if you want to stay with us, it's going to be good money no matter what. Goff and Wentz have to earn it. They're going to have opt-outs, essentially, from their teams. It really in the next 2 seasons. So that's how it's different. There's so much stability in this contract for Mahomes.
We're speaking to Michael Genetti of SpotTrack.
Yeah, Michael, this is Blaine here. I was looking at the first 3 and 4 years, and I compared it to Tannehill's contract. And in Tannehill's first 4 years, he gets $118 million. And Mahomes, who's the best in the world, is $103 million. Why do you think he – and if, is that true? And do you look at it that way, even though it's an extension? And in his first 3 or 4 years, does that favor – the organization, the Chiefs, but then after that, then it kind of follows up and favors Mahomes.
Exactly, and it's a great point. It's the difference between the Tannehill situation and the Mahomes situation, whereas Tannehill needed to get paid cash right now. It's about paying him right now for services that he's done and hopefully for 2 more years that look just like that. So it was about front-loading that deal. You know, the Chiefs did the exact opposite here, and Mahomes agreed to it, which I completely agree with. Those first 3 years, like I said, there's only $63 million over the next 3 years, which when you're talking about a $477 million contract, that pales in comparison to a lot of other contracts that are out there. But it's done for a reason. There's a bunch of 26 and 27-year-olds on this Chiefs core right now that they want to keep for the next 2 seasons and to try to win another Super Bowl or two. So it's about team-friendly for 3 years. And then in 2022, when these new NFL TV contracts kick in, that salary cap likely jumps, you know, $20 to $25 million, possibly up to $250 million, Mahomes will get paid. He'll have high cap hits, high cash hits, and everything should reflect the current state of the NFL at that point. So I think it's really smart how they progress this thing over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yes, by the organization, of course. Now, when you talked about the new TV contract, would you have recommended to do such a long-term deal in 10 to 12 years, or would you have said, okay, let's do 4 or 5 years, and then say that way you can hit them over the head again and maybe even get more than your $40 million base salary in year four?
It's a great point. And almost every single time I would agree with you. I know that's exactly what Dak Prescott is pushing for. I know that's exactly what Deshaun Watson is pushing for. They want 3 years of quick, dirty cash, get out and do this thing again in 2023. And I completely agree with that. That's the right approach for them. I really just think that Kansas City stepped forward with a contract that had $477 million on it. Patrick Mahomes said, yep, that's good enough. Let's just get this done. It's just one of those situations where they blew him away. And like I said, they gave him all the control. If there's a point in 2025 when he says, all right, you know, the next couple of seasons, it's not enough. This isn't enough. The league has exploded. There's guys around me making $55 million. We've got to redo this. He can opt to say, let's cut this thing off and do it again because he does have the control over this contract. So I do think it hits all the bullet points that you mentioned there. And like I said, sometimes you just get blown away by the overall contract and you just have to say yes. And I think that's what happened.
I think Mahomes is in his own stratosphere when it comes to contract naturally because of his playing ability. But what should something Dak Prescott be looking for as far as numbers with his contract?
Well, there's no question that the scale slides up now for Watson, for Mahomes, for Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. Everybody slides up. You're right, though. I do think Mahomes is going to be the anomaly. We've seen it with before. For instance, right now with Julio Jones at the wide receiver position, he's been at $22 million a year now for 2.5 seasons. Nobody's approached that, right? Everybody else is at $19 and $20 million below him. I think that's what's going to happen with Mahomes. Nobody's really going to approach the $45 million a year mark for a couple of seasons. But, you know, Dak and Watson now are $40 million men. You have to get to that mark now. That's the second tier of the quarterback. And like I said, they're pushing for short term. So it's going to be high impactful cap hits for those players. And with Dak specifically, that's the price you pay for letting the contract expire. Unfortunately, is you don't have the luxury of what Mahomes did where you can roll 2 years of his rookie contract into that extension and cut your cap savings. The Chiefs only added $30,000 of cap this year on a $477 million contract. That's an incredible statement for a team that just gave away so much cash. Dallas is not going to have that luxury. They're going to have high cap hits with Dak Prescott over a short term to keep him happy.
We're speaking to Michael Genetti from SpotTrack talking NFL contracts. So if you're John Robinson, the Titans general manager, Michael, how would you feel now about the deal that you signed Tannehill to?
It was risky the second he did it, and I'm sure he knows it. I mean, it is extremely front-loaded to the point of where, you know, $91 million guaranteed is pretty much locked in place. I understand there's a couple of outs there after 2 years, but Ryan Tannehill is going to make $91 million over the next 3 seasons, and there's really not too much Tennessee can do about it. You know, when you're talking about the average salary, that doesn't scare me too much. That's going to get blown away now by four or five other quarterbacks. But Tannehill better come back to the form of 2019 and not 2017 or 16. Otherwise, this thing is going to be a mess for a couple of seasons because it does impact the way that they can build that roster around him for sure.
In your mind right now, Jadeveon Clowney is still out there. We've heard, you know, he wants upwards of $17 million, even on a one-year deal. What, in your opinion, do you think he can be had for? The Titans are one of the teams, obviously, that are still interested.
Yeah, the Titans, I believe, are in a holding pattern on him and have been really all offseason. They're waiting for that thing to drop down to a number that they like. My guess is that number is probably $12 million. I think we're approaching that. I really do think the contending teams like Tennessee and Dallas, who are in on him, want that number to get down to 12, and they can do maybe 2 for 24, something around that area, because I do think that's something that's affordable to those contending teams. My guess is teams like the Raiders and the Browns have gone north of that, you know, but that's a less desirable destination right now for Clowney. And of course, going back to Seattle also makes sense, but my guess is it's even cheaper than the other numbers I've mentioned here. This is a guy who started off at $20 million plus 18 months ago and is now, you know, approaching half of that in the middle of July in an offseason where he was the most impactful edge rusher on the market. It's kind of it's an anomaly. We haven't seen this before. Generally, these guys get snatched up in early March and there's no looking back. So, you know, GMs are getting smarter. There's a lot more analytics built into these decisions. And quite frankly, the analytics weren't good with Clowney last year. So that's why we're here now. And I do think the number could drop to as low as $12 million for him.
John Robinson also said he's looking for common ground with the representatives for Derrick Henry. What do you think? Do you think the problem is that Henry's people view him, as more than just a two-down back, and the Titans view him as really just a pure runner?
I do. That's probably what the agents are trying to sell right now, not to mention that, you know, the Tennessee season didn't turn around really until Derrick Henry got going last year. They can speak to the offense kind of going through Derrick Henry and how much that will fall off if he's not there. It's just a really tough argument to make. There's so much going against the running back right now. And quite frankly, a $10.5 million franchise tag is a pretty good payday for a running back in this day, especially as you mentioned, for a two down back who's going to be complimented after that. So, it's a tough sell. You know, if they can slap a two franchise tag contract in front of him and hope he takes it, to me, that's the best situation for both sides. But, yeah, they're trying their best here with 8 days to go to lock something in.
All right, that was Michael Jannetty from SpotTrack. Some good information, not only about Jadeveon Clowney and Derrick Henry, but, of course, Patrick Mahomes. And, Blaine, I gave you full credit because everybody was dancing in the aisles initially when the Mahomes story came out. And, you know, you were more or less one of the first I heard or read that said, not so fast, my friends. Take another look at this deal. And, you know, he has been, it's interesting, the criticisms that have come about the wisdom of signing a 10-year deal. That's three football lifetimes, maybe. You know, three cycles, if you talk about, you know, quarterbacks wanting to get paid sort of in three-year increments. But then you hear the other side, mm-hmm. that this was exactly what Mahomes wanted. He's being advised by his father, Patrick, a former major league pitcher, and his godfather, LaTroy Hawkins, who pitched, you know, almost 20 years in the big leagues. And Mahomes wanted to leave some money on the table so the Chiefs could stay competitive. That was a big thing for him. What about that mindset? You know, and based on everything that you've seen and read over the last 24 hours.
Well, I mean, nothing has changed, Mark. For me, as far as, to be honest, I don't care who was advising him. That's on him. That's his own personal, you know, people around him. That's his personal decision, and he felt comfortable and that he should sign it. But then to leave cap space there, I thought that was pretty unique in that he can also opt out at times throughout this contract. So he's not set in stone. So those are the outliers that we didn't know about at the time. Oh, those are only, I guess that's the only thing really that he can opt out and still really get a bigger contract. He's still very young. He's going to play a long time, hopefully, and he's got some guarantees in there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, what happens is everybody just looks at the numbers and then, you know, the big, oh, $477, $503 million, and you get lost in a shuffle of what actually to me as players and not a quarterback and nothing, let alone a guy of his ilk that is going to be, you know, the best that we probably have ever seen eventually, statistically. And most players are looking for a window where you're saying, okay, I'm elite, 3 or 4 years elite, then I hit them again elite, you know, big money. So the money may change as he mentioned that, you know, the money keeps growing here in the next 3 or 4 years. Just imagine what the National Football League would be worth. And Mahomes, as I call him, will be the face of the National Football League, and I think it'll be worth more than what he's making. I believe that. And so to me, you try to get short windows of hitting them over the hammer, and that's what I call it, and that's what players typically say. You know, if you have a short window, let's say 3 or 4 years to get them again, you do it, because you don't know what tomorrow brings in the National Football League. It stands for not for long, and it's a reason why players think that way, and that's why I was thinking as I was. So I was really interested in those first 3 or 4 years of what he was actually getting in the $477 to $503 million, half of a billion-dollar contract, historic numbers in NFL history.
Which segues nicely into our next story, which is a blog post from J.C. Treader, the NFL Players Association president, who pushed some major issues with the league into public view, writing that the NFL and the NFLPA's joint coronavirus task agreed to a 48-day training camp without preseason games.
Yes, that's their committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's their committee.
Task committee.
In response, and this is interesting because we've talked about this, to the surge of Achilles tendon and hamstring injuries that occurred the season after the league's 2011 lockout, which similarly wiped out the offseason program. And according to Treader, the NFL has not provided a medical reason for insisting on two preseason games. A source said last week the NFL felt like it needed to have some preseason games to evaluate rosters, as well as give teams practice under the new pandemic-related travel protocols. But what Treader is saying essentially, that the NFL is prioritizing, you know, business as usual over innovative, you know, custom over science, or even football over health. And this is really interesting, that he's butting heads with them right now.
Well, I mean, you're never going to agree on all things. This is all new to everybody. What I wouldn't have done is made that public if I was in his shoes. I would have let them, and I'm sure he has, let them know that he disagrees with this philosophy and that they're moving full steam ahead. And they have full autonomy on control of the preseason games. So what did you actually accomplish by going after something that you really can't stop them from doing? To me, this is just general logic, and so I wouldn't have picked my battle there. I want to have something to stand on, you know, that okay, I can actually beat them. Well, here it's going to be only because they decide, okay, you know what, we decide no two preseason games. You'll get it done, and we'll fill out all the, you know, semantics of how to travel and manage through all this during the regular season. Then it's on you guys. But I don't think they are. I think the NFL is stomp on your head when we can, and you do as we say. And I think that's how they go about their business, because they can. So why pick that battle when they can win it ultimately and you can't do anything about it? So I would have kept that behind the scenes, let them know, vocally in those meetings, which I'm sure he did. I wouldn't take it to the public. I think now you're starting a rift here for, you know, you're not really going to win. And I believe them. I believe that's how they are, because that's how things are being, you know, moved here forward. I'm pretty sure of that. So to their credit, I think the NFL is trying to figure out things, and they're not really sure. And so they say, well, let's get two preseason games. You know why they may want two preseason games? It has nothing to do with naturally health and safety. Of course, he's right on that, and Treader. It's because maybe they must play two preseason games with their TV obligations, and they must give the fans and the networks something. And I don't know if that's part of it, but if I was guessing, it's always about business when you're talking about billions of dollar industry. It's always about that. So I'm just guessing maybe it's that.
I think fans are kind of getting tired of this. They just want to see their games. It's not like they're not and you know, I don't want to make this sound like they don't care about the players, because they do. But I think a lot of these, you know, people, you know, even like me, you know, I want everybody to be healthy. I don't want anybody to get sick. But we're all dealing with this. Everybody's got their own set of problems right now. And I agree with you to a certain extent that they don't want to hear about, you know, football players, highly paid football players complaining. And I agree, they're human beings. But I think in situations such as these, people are like, you know, just figure out a way and get it done. I think is essentially, you know, what a lot of fans are thinking. They don't want to hear about the dirty details. They don't really care about how the sausage is made. They just want to see games on the field.
Yeah. And I agree. And that's why I wouldn't have taken this one public. I would have kept this one in my back pocket and negotiated in those meetings.
All right, straight ahead. Will there be changes in Atlanta the way there might be changes in Cleveland and in Washington? 6:37 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. .45 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garages. Go to fourseasonsgarages.com to learn more. Mark Howard, along with Blaine Bishop, Kevin off this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer, of course, making the magic in the Zone studios. You know, we've seen this past week the Washington Redskins talking about a name change, or in the process of a name change. Pressured, obviously, politically and financially, in a corner to where Daniel Snyder, the team owner, really almost has no choice. The Cleveland Indians in Major League Baseball had done away with their Chief Wahoo mascot, which was deemed offensive to Native Americans 2 years ago. But now they're talking about a name change. And we asked the question, how far is this going to go? Are we going to talk, changes maybe with the Chicago Blackhawks, or some of the other major league teams that even reference Native Americans in their, you know, with their nickname? And that, of course, includes the Atlanta Braves. And, you know, this is a nickname that was attached to the team all the way back to its origins when they were the Boston Braves originally. And then they moved to Milwaukee, of course, in the 1950s, and then, of course, to Atlanta in the 1960s. But they do not intend to change their name. There is some talk, though, about their use of the tomahawk chop, which they sort of borrowed from Florida State, during football games. There are some in the Native American community who don't like the tomahawk chop. They feel like it trivializes the plight of the Native American. And there are others who feel like it's harmless fun, that fans don't mean anything offensive. It's just a rallying cry for the team and, you know, sort of bonds the fans together. And guys, it looks like the Braves, who are trying to walk the line here, say they honor, support, and value the Native American community. They won't play, you know, that music to get the chop going, but I don't think they're going to try to stop the chop if fans sort of independently use it during games.
Yeah, I mean, so what's your question, Mark? I mean, there is.
Well, that's it's.
Where's the line? I don't think the Braves are going to change their name. I don't believe that. I think they've been cooperative throughout this whole process, even after this has come back up. And I think they're just going to do exactly what you said. They're going to try not to encourage the chop. Other than that, I don't think it's going to affect the Braves at all. You know, we can, how far along does it go? I mean, we could talk about the Chiefs. I mean, there's so many names. I just don't know how far it goes down. Where's the line? So for me, I get the Redskins and everything. But, nobody's talked about the Blackhawks. I don't even know them mentioned, which for me, you start to wonder, okay, it also brings honor to the Native Americans to a certain extent because they're using your name. Now, if they're using it in a way that's offensive to you, then that's a totally different story. So I don't know all the history behind the Native Americans and what is offensive and not. Besides in 2013, when you read up on all the information about the Redskins, the other nicknames, I don't see where it becomes a huge issue. But I'd love for somebody to call in if they're a Native American, actually explain why the Braves or the Chiefs or the Blackhawks are offensive to them, because I don't know the history there. I don't. So I don't know where the line is drawn. Do you, Mark?
I don't know where the line is either, but in my opinion, I believe that, Redskins to me is a pejorative term.
Right.
Any way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine a team, being called the Blackskins? That just wouldn't happen in our society. The Indians, a lot of times we really don't use that term anymore. We use Native American. That's fine too. Like so many things, the Native American community does not speak with one voice. There are some people that probably don't care about it. There are some people that do. So it just depends on who's holding the hammer at this particular point. The Braves are not being asked by their sponsors, by any of the people who spend significant money to change this, but they also realize they have the tomahawk on their uniform. They have the chop house at their stadium, so I think they're not going to totally do away with the tomahawk chop, except not to officially sanction it. So in that way, I guess they're sort of walking the line and saying it's a fan thing more than it is a team thing.
Yeah, I mean. It's hard
but
to
I
disagree with any of that.
I think you look at the Blackhawks, you look at the Chiefs, there's a way to do it where you're not, using offensive symbols, logos or whatever, and still retain the team name. Now, in collegiate athletics, we've seen a lot of schools change their nickname because they felt like it was just offensive, just to use the name, which I think in some cases might have been an overreaction. But whatever the case, that's what we're seeing now. These are the times we're living in, and you're going to see some of this.
Yeah, well, this is the time. If you want some things to be changed and you feel offended, you definitely should speak up now because things are getting done. So, hey, this is in regard to anything, so not just nicknames at this point in time. So, yeah. And there's repercussions. If not, you write to the people who's the power of the be that are backers and supporters with the big paycheck. And if they see it the same way you do, eventually changes are made.
All right, straight ahead, we're going to revisit the NFL issue of how the players feel about some of the protocols coming down and if the NFL is taking the right road. 6:52 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.